Hello, everyone, and welcome to Forever Fathers Podcast. A while ago, I set out on a mission to collect and share stories and advice from the father figures in my life, from the guys I look up to, from the men who've been there. While I originally wanted to gain this info for my kids, I decided why not share it? Why not make a movement out of it? A movement back to an appreciation of the father figures in our lives. So thanks for joining me on this mission. Sit up straight, pay attention, take notes. And you just might learn something from the men who've been there. I'm your host, Alec Frank. And today, I get the pleasure to interview Ben Weideman. Hey, Ben.
Hi, Alec. Appreciate you inviting me to this. It's really looking forward to it for some time.
Awesome. Ben was gracious enough to let me up at his place here. It's like a cabin in the North Woods. And looked at deer pictures on the computer, on the trail cam pictures for the last hour or two here in the morning. Thanks for the cup of coffee this morning.
No problem. No problem. It's always a good morning when you see the sun coming up. Have a little coffee. Look at a few deer pictures from some of the deer that have been running around my property, things like that. Showed you a couple European mounts, things like that.
Oh, yeah.
That we had gotten from last deer season. The fun part is it wasn't only for myself, but the kids, things like that, everything they've shot and everything that we've harvested. And
yeah. That makes it all the more cool when half those racks up there are the kids from last year.
Right. And I think that gives me more enjoyment than anything is seeing the kids and what they get.
Yeah. Cool. Ben is a father, husband, fellow elk hunter. I haven't been deer hunting with him yet. We've been elk hunting a few times together. And so, Ben, how old are you?
I'm 41.
Okay. And tell me what you do.
So for a living, it'd be health, safety, environmental manager, HSE manager for a construction company. Pretty much, I need to make sure that if you want to say that we're following really the rules at OSHA, our company, what they put out there, that we're following what we need to follow to make sure we keep our workers safe.
Okay.
And that's, so there's a lot of different aspects of my job. Where, of course, we're keeping them safe, but also it's one of those that we do injury management. If somebody gets hurt, I'm the one taking them to the doctor.
Okay.
We're also making sure that we're following safety talks, training presentations, whatever we need to do. That's a big part of my job.
Okay.
So we get and we work in a dangerous environment. So it is one of those that we like to make sure that we're doing everything we need to do to keep everybody safe.
Cool. That's a lot of weight on your shoulders, then, isn't it?
It is. It is. Right now, we only have, at the site I'm at, we only have about 100 people working for us. But in a few months, we'll probably have upwards of 500 plus people working.
And you're in charge of keeping them all safe.
And I'm in charge of all of those people for keeping them safe. So it's really a big task.
Yeah.
And it's one of those that I take serious.
Yeah.
But it's one of those, there was a while I used to have my tools on and work, and I really appreciate I appreciate all the hard work everybody gives. And nobody goes to work wanting to get hurt.
Right.
You know, so and sometimes there's different issues why people get hurt, whether they're following what they needed to follow, or is it just because of the type of environment we work in that there was a failure somewhere else that they had no control over?
Right.
There's a lot of different aspects. It's not always really.
Yeah. So it's not always like neglect on their part that they're getting hurt.
Right. Yeah.
How'd you get there? How do you, cause yeah, you said you put your tools on and I know you did cause I've poured concrete with you before.
Right. And I think that's actually where we first met. If we want to back up a little bit.
Oh yeah. Let's start there. Yeah.
You know, so when we first met, you and my brother, Brian.
Yeah.
Knew each other, I believe, from Hormel.
Yeah.
And I believe I came down to help Brian. He needed some help one day, I think helping pour a driveway or something. I said, I can come down and help.
Yeah.
And I believe that's where we first met I think that's the first time I met you was doing that.
Yeah, I think you came down with your truck and a skiddy trailer, but you already had skids. You had a dump trailer full of rock, I think.
Right.
And you had to put her in four wheel back in that driveway. And I didn't know if it was going to do it or not. You got her in there and dumped
it. Right. We made it in. We made it easy, as easy as we could.
Yeah.
But But so I think that says a little bit about our, if you want to say our relationship, the first time we met, it's pouring concrete, doing some hard work, right?
Yeah.
It's not easy.
And Shark was there too.
Yep. My friend Shark was around there and we were helping Brian out. And
yeah, I remember the first time we were pouring and I was like, man, these guys, Brian's got some guys that can work, you know? And I think I said something about being old and you looked over at me and I think it might've been the wrong time to say that. I'll show you old. I think he will. I think we better start working here.
Right. So,
yeah. That goes to show. I know you can work.
Yeah. And it was, and like I said a little bit earlier, it kind of shows how our relationship started. And you get into hard work, which I think will probably be a theme that I'll have throughout this is hard work and those types of things that where you'll get in life at the end of the day with it and how happy and successful you'll be.
Yeah. Very cool. Well, I'm excited to get there.
Right.
So pouring concrete at the job you're at now. So how'd you get there? Tell me about
the job I started, if you want to say, I started many years ago to kind of start out after I got out of high school, went to college, and I did a number of years of college. One thing led to another that I never finished my degree. I was going to, my whole goal is to be a teacher.
Oh, okay.
Elementary teacher is actually what I really wanted to do. And,
no kidding.
Yeah.
Okay.
Liked little kids, liked a couple things, high school experiences that I had.
Yeah.
Really what kind of got me to the elementary school teaching was I used to teach little kids how to swimming lessons in the mornings.
Oh, okay.
So at our school, growing up in a small community, we were actually one of the only towns or communities that had a pool at the high school.
Cool.
So when we would be around there, they actually would ship all the first through fifth graders to the high school.
Yeah.
And I actually would teach little kids. That was one of my first things to do in the morning. My first period was teaching little kids how to swim.
No kidding. Awesome.
And that's where really I said, boy, I think I might kind of like this. So that was my senior year. You know, you get into the senior year, you're looking, you're not necessarily looking for the hardest classes.
Yeah,
you're looking
right.
for a couple things, but it was rewarding. So that's kind of how I got into saying, hey, I think I'm going to go to school, do teaching. And that's what I really wanted to do.
I have to tell everybody that in case you didn't see a picture, Ben's like 5 inches taller than me and way more built than me. And he's got kind of a beard. So this is pretty cool.
So it was really one of those that's what kind of started my path. But it was also, if you want to say growing up, there was a lot of things that my grandfather, that whatever we would have to do when it kind of got to construction, hey, somebody needs a new roof. We need siding. We need to pour concrete. We need to do something. He was very well-rounded and kind of, if you want to say, sparked some interest into construction.
Yeah.
And also at the end of the day is when I got out of school, it was one of those that if you want to go make some money and you're willing to work hard, you can make it happen.
Yeah.
So kind of right out of there, I was working for, once I got out of college and I had moved on, I was working for an excavating company.
Oh, okay.
And of all things, when I started working for that guy, my first job was down in Arizona.
No kidding.
So we went down about an hour from the Mexican border.
Okay.
And we're building shrimp ponds in the middle of the desert.
Wow.
So it was pretty crazy because everybody would say shrimp ponds right in the middle of the desert, literally an hour from Mexico. So
wow.
We'd fly into Phoenix and we'd stay down there. I stayed down there for about 6 months for this job.
No kidding.
And so literally that's where we're building shrimp ponds.
Huh.
So they could harvest, really was, how should I say it? They were farm grown shrimp is what they were.
Yeah.
And so that was really a neat experience. And that was really a lot of excavating work. We had a lot of dozers, backhoes, but I really started learning a lot of things about how that heavy equipment works. And with some farm experience with growing up on the farm, we were always on tractors, things like that. So a lot of things fit right in.
Yeah.
And then we also got into framing and pouring concrete, doing those types of things.
Yeah.
Well, after I got, I did that for a number of years. Once we got back from Arizona, kept working for the guy. And I will say that was one of my favorite jobs because when I got back and I working with in Wisconsin with this guy, you never knew what you were going to do from day to day.
Yeah.
The guy had elk farm. He had deer farms. he had an excavating company where you could literally be doing like water and sewer work.
Yeah.
You could be building roads for mm-hmm. new developments. I gotta think what else we'd do. We'd go build pole sheds. We'd pour concrete. You'd go work on his farm.
Yeah.
He also did scrap metal. So if you want to talk about being well-rounded, that's what was awesome. Fun about that job, you'd show up and you never knew what you were going to do today. All of a sudden be like, hey, go grab a truck and an excavator and you got to go dig something out. Right. You're like,
awesome.
And there were some days, you know, like I remember one of the first days, I'm like, hey, I've never run that excavator before. You'll figure it out.
That's awesome.
Know? So yeah. You get a lot of that into it. And that's what made it fun.
Yeah.
Right. It's like, try not to screw it up is really about where it got to be.
Yeah.
And so that really got to be a fun job where, like I said, it's fun to come to work and you don't know what you're going to do today sometimes. Yeah. And it really a neat experience on a lot of different things cool. that we did there. From there, I went into pouring concrete, if you want to say, pretty much on a road crew. And I had poured concrete before, but that's where, if you want to say, where I really learned a lot about concrete. If you thought you were working hard before,
yeah.
that was one of those where when we got on that road crew, we had, I'll say, for the most part, he was a good boss, but he expected a lot out of you, and rightly so.
Yeah.
It was one of those where I'd seen him run people off. You could be a great worker, but if you're not showing up to work,
yeah,
like he'd tell you, if you're not here, you're not helping me.
Yeah.
And it didn't matter how good of a worker you were. If you can't show up to work and you don't have a good excuse, he's not going to keep you around.
Yeah.
And he really, for a year, he'd bust you hard.
Yeah.
Right. Well, for me, it was easy because I was showing up to work every day.
Yeah.
And by that point, I had a couple young kids and it's like, well, you got to show up to work, get a paycheck, yeah, and do exactly. those types of things. But we did a lot of like curb and gutter, sidewalks, driveways, a lot of that type of stuff too. We get yep. into where it was a little bit of road work, where I say true road work, we're pouring a little bit of concrete on roads, but it wasn't a ton of it. We were more based on cities were redoing, like say city streets, right? And we'd come in, we were the concrete okay. phase of it.
Got
where
it.
It'd be, you know, the whole city streets tore apart. And then we come in when the prime contractor would say, hey, we got the water and sewer in, we got new lines run, whatever they were doing. Hey, we need the curb and gutter now. Oh, yeah. We need all the aprons or the approaches to the driveways.
Okay.
We need the driveways done, sidewalks, all those types of things.
So did you, going back, so did you learn, where do you learn how to pour concrete? Your grandpa? Or which place would you say you learned it? Or did you just keep learning a little bit by little bit?
I kept learning a little bit more and more as we went on. You know, there's a couple things I learned from my grandfather. We never poured a ton with him, though.
Okay.
And then when I worked for that excavating company, you know, if you want to say I really learned the basics working there.
Okay.
Because there was an older guy that I worked with that what I always liked about him, a lot of times it was only a real small crew.
Okay.
But we'd get in these huge projects. You'd be sitting there like there was a small crew of us and pretty soon we're building an 84-by-200 pole shed.
Yeah.
And we're pouring all the concrete. We're literally doing everything, right?
Yeah.
We're going from putting posts in the ground, framing the whole thing up, to pouring all the concrete. But the good thing is you got a lot of nuts and bolts from this guy. And meaning you could, like he'd say, we can build anything. As long as we have enough time, we can build it. And if it's only going to be 3 or 4 of us,
just takes longer.
Just takes a little longer, but we'll get it. And that's what I always appreciated about that guy. Tom Hendrickson was the guy's name. And, you know, he was a good mentor at that job for me because it was one of those I'd ask him questions. And even I think he wasn't used to people asking questions, you know, like squaring something up. I'm like, whoa, stop. Where'd you get that number? And I remember he kind of looked at me and he kind of looked dumbfounded. Who do you think you are? I said, well, what do you mean by that?
Yeah.
He's like, and to get back a little, he's not used to, he's used to having just some guys that are going to show up.
Oh, and not
if they even show
know.
Up, they don't want to know anything. Just I'm here for a paycheck and I'm really just, who knows if they're even going to be there in a month.
Yeah.
So when I asked that question, that's why he was so dumbfounded. Like, who do you think you are? And I'm like, Well, I said, well, maybe someday I'll want to do some of this on my own or build my own house or do something, right? And
yeah.
And I said, that's why I'm asking, because I said, it should be pretty simple on what you have to do. So he really seemed to have a little bit of an appreciation just because you got somebody asking a question who really wants to learn.
Yeah.
So that went a long ways with Tom. But he was one of those that, like I said, it would be, we can build anything because we got on some big projects.
Yeah.
And it was really amazing on some of the things that we did with a small crew. Like he said,
that's
just a matter of time. We'll get it done.
Cool. Very cool.
But yeah, so then when I got into, once I got done with the concrete part, then I went out to, I work at an oil refinery is our base work that I work out of now. But really, every time I've moved on is just looking, I keep looking for better opportunities.
Okay.
Really is why I've moved on from each position.
Okay.
Not that I didn't like the jobs or things like that, but you always say, hey, and a lot of times, better opportunities mean better money, maybe better hours, things like that.
Yeah.
So when I went out to the refinery, then I was doing a wide array of things between, you could be cleaning stuff to pouring concrete to building scaffold, those types of things.
Oh, okay.
And
so
then,
were you just, was it like a labor position?
Yeah,
okay.
In a labor position. So,
okay.
And that was fun too, a little bit, because you did a number of different things. And I had built some scaffold before, but never like we built at the refinery. That's a whole different ball game.
That's kind of a big place.
Into. It is a big place. It's, you know, it's thousands and thousands of acres inside a fenced in area. Like a lot of people don't understand. There's paved streets with names, right? The streets are named.
Yeah.
There's two different bus routes that are always going around. The
no
red,
kidding.
Or, I mean, the blue and green routes.
Yeah.
You know, there's two different bus routes. There's two different cafeterias in there.
Huh.
So it's a big place.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of big work that goes on.
Yeah.
So one of the first jobs when I got in there, doing a little bit of this and that, but I really got into the scaffold. And I think I'd been there for under a month, and we worked. But what they have these shutdowns.
Okay.
And when they shut the place down, they work 24 hours a day, 7 days a week to get the job done.
Oh, okay.
Because they're shutting down entire units.
Mm-hmm.
So that can be millions and millions of dollars each day. You know, they've got everything counted out to what it costs to be down. But when they shut things down, they want it up and working. I think I worked 12 hours a day, 55 days in a row, I think, like that. So it was.
Did you know that was coming when you signed up for the job?
I didn't really understand what was coming. if you want to say at that time when I did that stretch, though, it wasn't that far off, because when I was pouring concrete, the only day didn't work was Sunday.
Yeah.
Now the only thing I did was add a Sunday in.
Yeah.
So it was one of those. I was used to working 6 days a week. And honestly, the work at the refinery was a little easier.
Okay. Yeah.
The concrete was definitely that was, you didn't have to worry about being on a diet.
Yeah.
Pouring concrete. Yeah. You
ate whatever you wanted.
You could eat and drink anything you wanted. You weren't going to gain any weight. You were losing weight.
Oh, yeah.
So it was one of those that when I got out there, so some of the work was a little easier.
Okay.
But it's a little more demanding of how things were going, because now you're working around, obviously, a live oil refinery.
Yeah.
You've got some different hazards than I had working, if you want to say, on the road.
Right.
You know, with vehicles, now you've got pipes and different things. Keep the product in the pipe. You know, you don't want it out.
No kidding.
You know, because you always hear about explosions and different things that can happen that are bad. But it's really just understanding where you're working and what you need to do, right? Why, which brought me into safety, why you follow all these processes, procedures, all these types of things. And so what I had was starting out with my tools on, it was within a couple of years I got onto a safety committee.
Mm-hmm.
And I did a little bit, I'd talk a little bit in a couple safety meetings, do a couple things. And what do you know, one of the guys who was in safety kind of said, hey, seems like you got a little bit of a knack for, seems like you can talk to people, seems like you're not afraid to talk in the safety meeting. Would you like to try this out? And that's kind of where it started. He's like, you know what, if it doesn't work, you know, don't be afraid. You can go back to the crew and nothing lost is really kind of how it started. And that guy who got me in, the guy's name was Dale DeVries. And Dale was really a mentor for me when it came into safety, because he was a lot like me. He was a carpenter. Actually, he had been in the Carpenters and Laborers Union by trade.
Okay.
And he had started out as a laborer and then switched over to the carpenters a few years after that.
Yeah.
And really what he did was kind of show me the way and kind of guide me.
Okay.
You know, if you want to say into becoming a safety professional.
Okay. So was he the safety manager? Was he what you are now?
We'll put it this way. Dale was one of those that he had the job several times.
Yeah.
But he didn't really want the job.
Oh, okay.
So
okay.
He was one of those. He was a constant. It was always new managers coming in. So we always had, for a lot of years, for whatever reason, it was always hard to keep a true manager
there. So he'd be a safety manager, then he'd go back to the Carpenters Union when he'd get somebody
else. No, he'd always stay in the safety department.
Oh, okay.
He didn't really want the manager's job.
Okay.
But there was times by default that he had it.
Yeah, okay.
And usually what we do is hire other people. The company that I worked for was a worldwide company. We had 50,000 people throughout the world working in every corner of the world. So it was one of those really... they'd always be pulling people in.
Yeah.
And that was part of the reason for some of the failure, too, of not being able to keep a manager, was we didn't have anybody homegrown there.
Oh, okay.
They could be coming from anywhere, really a lot of times throughout the U.S., but, you know, we've had people working a lot of different places in the world.
Right.
But they come in. This wasn't home for them.
Yeah. So you got into the safety department. So did you go work at all then? Or was it all safety right away? Like all of a sudden you were working and you were had your belt, your tools on, and then all of a sudden you go to...
It was about 3 years that I had transitioned. Because I had started out there in like 2007.
Okay.
And about 2010 is really where I started helping out the safety department.
Okay.
And kind of just doing the easy task and just working my way up.
Okay.
And then it would have been in, I think it was 2016. I think it was December of 2016 that I had worked my way. If you want to say from, I'll say being like a safety tech, then I really got to be, worked my way into being a safety supervisor. And then next thing you know, the manager that I had, he was leaving in 2016. And then I think it was December of 2016, I became the manager there.
Okay, cool. How many people are you in charge of?
Well, right now, it's only me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Because it's slow.
Because it's slow.
Now. Okay.
When I became the supervisor, I think we had 14, 15 people in our department.
Yeah.
But we had about, there was a time we were hovering between 800 and 1,200 people working for our company.
Yeah.
At the same time. Jeez. I think there was pretty close to three years in a row, we had 800 people on our OSHA logs for an average.
Wow.
So we really had a lot of people there. We had a lot of big projects going on.
Yeah. And just you were in a safety meeting every week, like 10 times a week. How do you keep that many people safe?
Well, that's really where it comes down to. The good thing is the company I work for, we've got a pretty good program and they've got a lot of things laid out.
Okay.
But it is one of those, the company only gives you so much. And when you're working for a worldwide company, what happens in that worldwide company, they send things out. Some things are going to be relevant to you.
Yeah.
Other things aren't going to be relevant. So it's kind of sifting through what's relevant to the guys I have working.
Yeah.
Because right now I have carpenters, laborers, boilermakers. We used to have iron workers.
Yep.
And so you sit there, well, the iron workers and boilermakers care more about welding.
Yep.
And the carpenters and laborers care more about concrete, building scaffold, those types of things, right? So it's kind of how do you keep everything relevant and fresh for those guys? And then also what's going on inside the refinery.
Yeah.
I try to give them a little bit of an overview. Everybody likes to know what's going on with your company. And how we work is a little unique. But people like hearing what's going on throughout the world. But you got to say, hey, this is what's happening here and this is what can affect you.
Yeah.
Yep. So if we're talking about like scaffolding, I talk about the scaffolding that's relevant.
Yeah.
Not necessarily scaffold they're using other places in the world. But you might bring up, hey, there's other types.
Yeah.
Other things that we can see and use. But you're really trying to do some training on, for instance, if it's scaffolding, just what's relevant there.
Okay. Cool. And you like it, I assume, because you've been there for a few years now.
Yeah. So I've been out there since 2007 till now. And what I like, the best part is the guys.
Okay.
Is a lot of the guys that I still, if you want to say, am their safety supervisor or safe, you know, doing safety over them are a lot of guys that I work next to.
Yeah.
At one point in my career, a lot of them.
Cool.
And I think that helps a lot with even the new guys that come in is you've got other guys that tell them, if I come talk to somebody and somebody might grumble, because obviously safety.
Yeah, nobody likes to see them.
Yeah, usually you'll say the safety guy is the most hated guy on the job site.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
And what I'm about is teaching and saying, hey, there's a better way. And also telling them, hey, what, you know what happens if we do this unsafe? I don't want you hurt. You know, I really care about them not getting hurt.
Yeah.
And it is one of those that the guys, if somebody gives me a little bit of a hard time or something, it is one of those I've got enough guys around that kind of say, hey, he used to have his tools on.
Awesome.
He's been in that position. He knows exactly what you're going through.
Good.
And I'm trying to give him real world solutions, right? Yeah. You know, because it's real easy for people to fly at 30,000 feet in a corporate level and make a rule. And now it's my job to put it in play, right? With the boots on the ground. And that's where some things get lost in translation on what the people at 30,000 feet think compared to we're out here with, like last week, 100 people on the ground and we're doing some, we're doing real work.
Big stuff.
Right. Yeah. We work with some real big stuff.
Yeah. Cool.
Like I went in last week and it's hard to say, but I mean, we're doing lifts now, 100,000 pound lift. You kind of seem like, oh, it's common, but
that's
for us,
crazy.
It really is common
to
do like a 100,000 pound lift.
Cool.
You know, we don't think much about it.
So what's a 100,000 pound lift? Explain that.
Well, that'd be, we were lifting, really what we were lifting was part of a heater section.
Okay.
So it weighed, by the time you took the weight of what we were lifting, we're demoing it. By the time you take that and the rigging and everything you have, it weighs almost 100,000 pounds.
Yeah.
So you get one of those, and that's where I say, the biggest lift that I can think I was ever a part of, we built a vessel, and we built it, did everything with it. I think it weighed 1.6 million pounds. So you've got 500 foot of boom. I think the entire crane weighed over 5 million pounds.
Jeez.
You know, those are the types of things that we get into. That they're big. But that's why we also have a level of safety.
Yeah.
That we know we have to really watch with these guys what's going on.
Yeah.
Not just watching what they're doing, but what's the equipment capacities, things like that.
Yeah.
You know, so we really have to watch a lot of things, because if that falls, it's a really bad day for a lot of people.
Yeah, no kidding. Cool. Let's transition into family. I need to get that in there.
Absolutely.
Tell me about your kids. So I'll tell everybody, I have four kids. They know that. And I show up here, there's not many places I show up where they say, well, how many kids do you have now? And I say four. Usually people are like, four? That's a lot of kids. But I show up here and I kind of say that nonchalantly. So,
right. So we've only got nine kids. And so
only nine.
I always like that, whether you're getting a haircut or you're just having a general conversation with people. And, you know, obviously things you had brought up about family casually in conversations and people. You have nine kids.
Yeah.
And, you know, they usually do a double take on that.
Yeah.
And, but it is one of those, my wife and I, between us. So my wife and I had both been divorced. And to get to that story is a little funny, because we both happened to live on the same street.
No kidding. She had
been living there for, I think, 2 years. And I had been living at my house 11 years, maybe something like that.
Yeah.
And what do you know, her three youngest kids and my three kids lined up in age.
Wow.
She was on a walk, and that's kind of how we met. We were only seven houses down from each other.
No kidding.
Huh. But she had five kids. I had three kids. And after we met, we got married in 2015. And I remember she even asked me, you know, hey, you know, would you ever think about having any more kids? She's like, you know, it was one of those, we just had the conversation. I said, honey, we have eight kids. We'll be fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, at the end of the day, about a year and a half later, we had a little surprise come. So that we made number nine. So we have hers, mine, and ours is what we have.
Awesome.
So I always like to tell people we're kind of the Brady Bunch on steroids is kind of where it gets to with us.
Jeez.
So it is a lot of fun. So we have kids ranging in age from 22 to 2.
Cool. Very cool. Awesome. Well, let's do some concrete buster.
Yeah, questions. Absolutely.
So these are the random questions we just ask, go through the deck and get some random stuff out of you. First one, which holiday do you enjoy most?
I think for me that's pretty easy. I think it's Christmas.
Okay.
I think with all the kids and just the family we have, it is one of those that the other thing is I like to cook. I like to do that kind of stuff.
Okay.
And it's one of those where I push my wife out of the kitchen.
Awesome.
And so for Christmas Day, you get all the kids around here. Because with our families being, with both of us being divorced before and just the way the kids are, it's great getting everybody together.
Yeah.
And we can get everybody together Christmas Day. And because kids are other places sometimes, right?
Yep.
So they might be a week at their dad's or their mom's, things like that. And we get them all together. And usually I cook a turkey, stuffing, go through everything, make everything, and I really enjoy that.
Awesome.
Plus, it's fun seeing the kids open presents, things like that. Now it's a lot of fun when you've got a two-year-old who's things figured out on, oh, I open a present. Oh, I get things. You know, fun again watching that.
Awesome.
Because for us, when you get back to family a little bit, we've got the two-year-old, but then we've got two seventh graders, two ninth graders.
Oh, yeah.
Two juniors. Like a sophomore in college and roughly a senior in college.
Yeah.
You know, so you get all the kids were getting a little older. So it's fun having that little kid around for Christmas again.
Yeah.
And, but yeah, I really enjoy Christmas and getting everybody around home and things like that.
Very cool. What's the best story you heard about your grandparents?
Well, there's a lot of stories with grandparents.
You know, it can't be your grandpa coming out of the deer on an antler,
right?
Or on a rack.
I understand, Brian. My brother Brian has already told that story on your podcast. Yeah. So,
now I've heard that story.
I can't say that.
Yeah, I think 21 times maybe.
Well, it's a good story.
It is a good story. I tell it quite often.
I think where I was really lucky, you know, when it comes to grandparents, is really when it comes to them. That when I was in, I think I was still in junior high and had two sets of great grandparents yet.
Oh, okay.
Both from my mom's side. So I had my grandfather Warren's parents were alive, and then also my grandmother Mary Donna, her parents were alive.
Okay.
And I guess I really like a lot from my grandmother's dad, Theodore. He always had a lot of good stories, but he'd always tell you about the Depression, and he lived down in Chicago.
Okay.
And then he'd come up and farm. And I think a lot of it is, I don't know if there's a particular story, but it probably just hearing things about the Depression.
Yeah.
And he usually did, like, I believe at that time he was running a grocery store.
Oh, okay.
And like he said, kind of the only people that really had any type of money were people that, let's say police officers, because they were employed, right?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people weren't employed, but it was those types of things that if you want to say,
yeah.
They had money, but a lot of people didn't. And just trying to help people out and what you could do running a grocery store during the Great Depression in Chicago and things like that. I thought some of those were some pretty interesting stories.
Yeah.
And he was one. He had a lot. He had done a lot of different things.
Okay.
Between running a store in Chicago, really being in the city.
Yeah.
And then he moved up to central Wisconsin, didn't know anything about farming really, and started farming.
Cool.
So, I mean, it's kind of really a turn where I'm pretty sure a lot of his neighbors for a little while laughed at him and some of what he was trying to do coming out of a really being kind of a city slicker.
Yeah.
And doing that.
Yeah. Cool.
So, but I think him talking about some of those stories where you really get another generation past your grandparents even was a lot of fun. Just listening
really
to
awesome.
That type of stuff.
Cool. Very cool. Let's go to which teacher from your childhood do you most appreciate?
Well, there's a couple teachers that I appreciate a lot. I think the teachers that I appreciated the most really gave you a little bit of real life world experience on what's going to help you through. So there's kind of two teachers that come to mind. I would say Mr. Welsh and Mr. Menwald. Mr. Menwald, he kind of went more on. He'd teach you economics, and he kind of taught some of those types of things.
Yeah.
But he'd say, okay, every week in his class, you had to get an article, a newspaper article, and you had to bring it in.
Yeah.
So you actually had to find five, But everybody had to talk about one article and how does it relate, if you want to say, almost like to modern history.
That's awesome.
So that was kind of cool because it gets you thinking about a lot of things. But the other thing he did in his classes, he's like, we're going to learn how to do taxes. Taxes are easy. He's like, you guys don't make much for money, you know, for jobs. But he's trying to give you some real life things like that. And I thought that was really good. And the other one, Mr. Welsh, what I liked about him, he was a football coach. He was a track coach. He wore a lot of different hats at the school. And okay. Then he ended up working his way up to superintendent after I had left.
Oh, okay.
But things that he had taught were, all of a sudden, when you're playing sports and doing things, well, now you need to dress up for game day, right? If it's football,
awesome.
they expect you to dress up. And they expect you, you know, to act. The reason they're having you dress up is so you're not fooling around at school, right? They want you a little bit focused on, hey, you've got a game today, things like that. So he's the one who actually taught me how to tie a tie.
Cool.
He's like, hey, you know, but he went through with a whole group of us. Hey, you guys got to learn this.
That's
learn how
awesome.
To tie a tie. And the other thing he did was teach us how to shake hands.
Okay.
When you shake another man's hand that, you know, we actually practice this where you're actually trying to, you know, a good firm grip, look them in the eye, things like that. So
that's cool.
Those were a couple things that I thought for teachers
that
are teaching you things that it's beyond your normal reading, writing, arithmetic, those types of things. He's teaching you things that'll make you successful in the real world.
Yeah, that's very cool.
So those are the two guys I would say. You know,
that's
instead
awesome.
Of one, I had two there that really I thought went a long ways.
Yeah, those are awesome. Very cool. I mean, this is pretty obvious, but you might add something to it. What do you love about where you live? We did look at deer pictures all morning in your backyard.
Right.
But no, go ahead.
Well, and you can take where you live at a couple different levels.
Yeah.
Meaning, like, just where I live right now. And obviously, we're in my basement right now, and we're looking out a couple windows, looking into the woods, into a little valley. And we've looked at some deer pictures, things like that today. I'm extremely lucky where I live because we've got a couple horses. We've got some beautiful land around here that we're pretty close to having 20 acres of land, just under 20 acres.
Yeah.
Got a hayfield in the back. Got spots to deer hunt, all these things.
Yeah.
But it's, if anything, I like living in the country. It's it's really a nice area.
Mm-hmm.
And you can have four-wheelers and snowmobiles. And like I said, the horses, kids can go ride horses, things like that. But I just like being out in the country.
Cool.
And in that. And then as you expand out a little more, I live around the community of River Falls, Wisconsin. It's just a good community.
Yeah.
And people are willing to help each other. The schools are good. Just a lot of good people around.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then even expand a little more. I grew up in central Wisconsin.
Yeah.
But it is one of those, I would say, you know, I'm not old, but the older you get, the winter sometimes can wear on you a little.
Oh,
but
yeah.
I enjoy being outside. I enjoy a lot of different activities outside and doing that. And sometimes you're like, man, winter gets a little long.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, I just love the traditions and different things that of being in Wisconsin and really being a Wisconsinite and and being around the area.
Yeah. Yeah, there's lots of cool stuff to do up here. I mean, you don't get bored.
Absolutely.
So
cool. Absolutely.
Well, let's move into the meat and potatoes, as we call it, the story round. Just a brief. So the cool part about being at Ben's house with all those kids is that it's just like being at my house, except, well, it's about the same as being at my house because all my kids are little and make way more noise than your kids, I feel like.
Well, the good thing, we've only got 1 2-year-old.
Yeah, exactly.
Compared to your kids are pretty young, where besides the puppy and the baby, we're...
Yeah, it's pretty quiet around here.
It actually is fairly quiet, but obviously I have no... how should I say this? We always have plenty going on around here. There's always something going on, whether it be some sort of kids' activities or baby, dog. You know, we keep adding more things around here because we don't have enough to do yet.
Right. You didn't have enough, so you got a dog.
Right.
Well, why don't you think back to the events or the people that changed your life, and what story would you want your kids or your grandkids to know?
Well, that's a good question. That's a good question because there's a lot of people depending where you're at in life, depending on where you're in life, of how they affect you, I guess, at the time. You know, because you've got, like for me, I said a little bit about great-grandparents, grandparents, parents, and even teachers, things like that. And where does everybody affect you? And sometimes you look back and say, boy, that person really pushed you through a certain time, or you had a good friend or somebody that helps you through times.
Yeah.
And then you see just kind of how you evolve and how do you handle something differently? Because I'll even go back to work a little bit, that I look when I first started, let's say, especially getting into safety, how I handle an event.
Yeah.
Let's say in 2010 or 2011, and how do I handle that same event now?
Yeah.
A lot of times it looks completely different, right?
Yeah.
Because it's like anything. It's like life, where you've got different experiences that happen. You've got all these different people you've talked to. And I always try to learn something. Everybody has a story, and everybody will teach you something about life if you're willing to listen. You might not necessarily agree with everything they're saying, but everybody's got an interesting story and something that they have for their own personal experiences that can help you.
Yeah.
I'll even go back to my buddy Dale, who really helped me out with safety. It's kind of funny, because when it comes to some of my life experiences with some of these things, when I got into safety, now you're doing public speaking.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of public speaking. There's nothing to talk. It's nothing to talk in front of 400 people at one time.
Yeah.
Right. And every day you're talking. You know, I did a presentation in front of 400 people and I had an hour to get ready.
Man.
Those types of things where it's, hey, this is what's going on. You need to get this figured out and go after it. Well, what Dale, I really liked Dale, because I'd look at his, how he spoke to people and how he interacted.
Okay.
And so then I try to take some of those things off him. But then what I'd find myself doing when it comes to public speaking is, who do I think does a good job?
Yeah.
And how do I take some sort of trait? What do they do? How do they engage people? Things like that.
Yeah.
So that's what I always believe. You can learn something from somebody. And that's what I always tell all the people that worked in my department, you know, because, man, is there a stat out there, something about public speaking is like one of people's worst fears?
Yeah.
You know, like 90% there's some people, of the people that'd rather be dead than be public speaking. That's a big deal.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so it is one of those that you get more and more comfortable with it after a while. And, but I always believe there's something you can learn from people. So when I look at my life a little bit, you know, as you go through, and I mentioned a little bit about a couple of the teachers.
Yeah.
You know, so you always had some teachers helping you along. And then I even look at like my mom and dad. And for instance, like in high school, I really appreciated my dad. If you were serious about weightlifting, you went in the morning, because all the serious people went in the morning.
Yeah.
So before school ever started, you'd be up at 6 o'clock in the morning going to school. Dad would give me a ride, and he'd give, hey, anybody else need rides? So a lot of times there was a couple parents that at least got it where, hey, the boys need to go weightlifting before we had our license, right? So you're a freshman in high school, eighth grade, freshman year, sophomore year, before you ever got your license, my dad made sure we got up there every day.
Very cool.
So nobody was picking you up. So, and that takes something out of his, you know, he's got to be up, he's got to be doing things, but he was more than willing to do those types of things. And I think that's always what I try to pass on to the kids. If they want to do, I don't care if it's a sporting event or some other school event or something that they have, that's something I always hope to pass on is, hey, you know, if it's important to you, and if my dad went to help me there, I would have never got up there to go weightlifting, right?
Yeah.
With everybody that was serious about doing it.
Right, right.
You know, even my mom, and I know during Brian's podcast, he talked a little bit, right? She started out working third shift and working through the night. And when you get older, and like for me, I've worked plenty of night shifts, because as soon as we get into what we call those turnarounds or shutdowns, I would be working 7 days a week, 12 hours a day. And I'd go to work. I'd be to work at 6 at night, get back at 7, 8 in the morning.
Yeah.
you know, sometimes you didn't even see the kids off to school. They're already gone.
Oh, yeah.
And then, especially when I was going through a divorce, there's sometimes I was staying up all day with the kids and only grabbing an hour of sleep when they take a nap.
Yeah.
You know, and then you really start to appreciate those types of things.
Yeah.
And then even stepping up to the to my grandparents. And I knew my grandparents a lot better on my mom's side, you know, Warren and Mary Donna, who you've met. And really what I got, especially out of my grandfather, is hard work.
Yeah.
Right? If you work hard, things are going to happen. And I'd even say on how he judged people, it really came off, well, that guy isn't a very hard worker. I don't think he cared where you came from, what you believed, or what you had going. If you worked hard, he was going to give you a fair shake.
Cool.
I really believe that. And I think that's gone a long ways with me when it comes to who I'm, if you want to say hang around, who I'm with, the types of activities we do, right? Pour some concrete, right? You're sitting there. If people aren't going to work hard or pull their weight, it's those types of things that really, if you want to say, probably irritate me a lot, like they probably irritated my grandpa back in the day.
Yeah.
So, you know, and my grandmother, she stayed at home, but that doesn't mean that she didn't do anything. I mean,
right?
She was constantly cooking, cleaning. She was out there helping with hay. I remember being a little kid. She was out there helping unload hay because we needed help.
Yeah.
You know, so, and she kept the house immaculate. And you'd always come in, you always had great meals to eat, things like that.
Yeah.
And she worked just as hard to keep the family going, if you want to say, you know, because they had six kids, you know, and then my brother and I were unique that when I'd come over and do stuff with my grandfather, there's people who thought he was my dad. You know, not very often you go work with your grandfather. He'd be on a service call and people, oh, it's your son. He's like, no, it's my grandson.
Yeah.
You know, I got a lot of that. And I know so did Brian, you know, because we'd take turns going over there, over to their house, their farm, between the farming and him running a mechanic shop of doing those types of things. And then, man, you even get back to, like I was talking a little bit about my great-grandparents. And there's not a lot of people that get to go deer hunting with their great-grandfather.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And I did that for a number of years. And where I'm lucky now is my kids, they're hunting with their great-grandfather.
Yeah.
And those are a lot of things right there where you sit there and say, you know, I can be 85, I can be 90, and I can be out deer hunting, you know, with your great-grandkids. I think that's great.
Oh, yeah.
And it just kind of shows perseverance that, hey, I'm going to do this.
Yeah.
And really with that, the perseverance, the hard work, is really I guess really a factor that's really played into my life of I really believe that from everybody that I've talked about, they kind of show you always need a little luck, but if you kind of keep doing that hard work and keep persevering, you're going to be all right. Everything's going to be all right.
Yeah. Cool. Man, you had a lot of good examples, or a lot of good mentors.
Well, so, I think I'm lucky that way, you know, because even when you talked to me about this podcast, that's one thing I kind of thought about. I think I'm really lucky that way. Yeah. And even a lot of the friends and people just that I've been around, not including just family members, but I've got a lot of friends and that work hard and success can mean a lot of different things.
Yeah.
Success can be money. It can be, you know, so that's what a lot of people think success is.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, success is, to me, is a lot has to do with happiness.
Yeah.
And hey, you know, because at the end of the day, we all need money to live, whether we like it or not. That's a fact of life. But it is one of those that really, if you work hard, you'll be successful in a lot of different avenues. And between the happiness, the money, all, you know, all these other things on whatever makes you happy, right? Success means a lot of different things to a lot of different people.
Yeah.
And I think it also means where you're at in your career.
Yeah.
Right. When you're in your young 20s and if you got young kids like I did, you know, I had a 5'3" and 1 year old. And my kids were 5'3" and one when when their mom and I got divorced.
Yeah.
You know, working and keeping everything going is different now than having a 2-year-old like I do on just where I'm at in my stage of life. And if I need to take a day off, I'm taking a day off now.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, whereas before you couldn't.
At the end of the day, I wanted to,
yeah,
but you couldn't afford it.
Yep, exactly.
You know, so now you sit there, you know, priorities change on those types of things.
Yeah, very cool. Why do you think, so I feel the same way you do about, I'm lucky to have all these men in my life that that taught me, you know, that, yep, that I got to learn from, not just men and women. So why do you think you where do you think you got that mindset where you said it, everybody has a story, everybody can teach you something. Where do you think you got that mindset, if you had to pinpoint it?
Well, I think a lot of that is, I think a lot of things kind of for me, honestly, circle back to like my grandfather, Warren.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of a little bit on him.
Okay.
But I also remember, for instance, him and my great-grandfather, Theodore, during family events, if you want to say, it would be having a family event, and politically they thought completely different.
Yeah.
But I guess it was always fun listening to both sides of their stories on how they would kind of banter back and forth and different things. But it's one of those, I think it's from him I get it, really. Okay. That cool. That a lot of it that with what you're saying.
Cool. Very cool. Well, let's go on to the outro. I'll think of a better name for that. If you think of a better name for that, you let me know. But
I don't know if I can be the advisor to the director yet.
But you could be the assistant advisor to the director. We'll think up something.
Right.
Well, we got favorite quote, favorite book, favorite food.
Okay.
In whatever order you want to give it.
So we'll do, I've got two different quotes that I'll kind of say. There's one from my grandmother that I always like for a quote.
Okay.
And she'd always say, nothing's free. And that means a lot of different things, I really believe.
Yes,
it does. Because she's absolutely right. There's nothing free. Because I always get a kick out of it. The kids will say, hey, that's free. And I said, you know what my grandmother always says? Nothing's free.
Yeah.
So whether you're buying something, and I also think that comes down to respect and hard work and all those things, that respect is earned. It's not free. Like I say, the sale, when they say, if you're buying something, buy one, get one free. It's like, well, it's not free. You're paying for it somewhere.
Yeah.
So I always enjoyed that about my grandmother.
Cool.
Grandmother, she'd always say, nothing's free.
That's awesome.
But one thing I also have is one thing. This is a good friend of mine. He lives out in Washington State. And he gave me, I won't call it a quote, but he calls it the 10 Commandments for Career Success.
Okay.
And I think if you follow these. Now here's the thing. For somebody like me, I guess I've never thought that I have to look at something like this, but it really brings it into perspective that if you're doing these, whether it's naturally or you just think about doing them, that you will be successful in whatever you do. So the first one is be positive. You need to remember attitude is everything. Show up on time every day, reliability. Work hard. Earn your keep something done. Number 4, get along. Play together nice in the sandbox. So that's really at work, but I could say that's at home, that's everywhere you go, right? Number 5, pay it forward. Do more than is expected today and you will receive more than you expected. Number 6, be flexible. Be willing to take on different tasks. Number 7, figure it out. Be a problem solver, not a problem asker. And I think at work, that's probably one of the big things. I think a lot of people can be problem askers.
Yep.
And I've even brought that home of, let's find solutions.
Yeah.
Right. Because this is what I get. A lot of people, they like to bring up the problems. And that's fine. That's fair. You need to bring up problems. But are you going to be part of the problem or part of the solution?
Exactly.
So, you know, that's a big thing that I guess I'm always on.
Yep.
8, join the club. Be proud to be part of your organization. Now, that could be your company, that could be your family, that could be your state, that's wherever, you know, whatever it is, make sure you're proud of your organization.
Very cool.
Number 9, no whining. communicate positively and well. Don't be high maintenance. I think we all know people that are high maintenance.
Yes.
And it seems like there's always a problem. There's always something going on. And then number 10, keep learning. If you don't keep up, you'll become obsolete.
Awesome.
So I really, you know, when it comes to the quote, that there's a lot there, but I think there's a lot of good things to take away from that. And I actually keep that posted at my desk. So if you're sitting there, you know, and it's easy some days to get in, you start whining a little, well, you look up there, be positive, right? Be part of the solution, not the problem. You know, and those things, they can get you refocused.
Yeah.
Real quick. But I keep that right above my computer.
That is cool.
Right in my desk.
Did he write that?
No. Of all things, this came from some small manufacturing group in northern Wisconsin.
No kidding.
Is who published this. But
that is awesome.
But cool. It's a friend of mine from Washington State who I worked with for a good number of years.
Okay.
He had found that. And he's like, man. Because him and I really, I'd say, think a lot alike.
Yeah.
It's kind of funny because he has a completely different story.
Yeah.
He was actually an immigrant.
Oh, okay.
And he came in, and at the end of the day, it's amazing. It's almost like him and I could be brothers on how we talk about things.
Very
and cool. How we feel about things, and completely different life experiences, but it just a very easy guy to talk to, and we really bounce a lot of things off each other.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very cool.
Yeah.
Now,
I think there's a couple more I need to answer, isn't
yeah.
in there?
Yeah, there what is.
So I had the quote.
Yeah. Favorite book.
Favorite book. So I think, like a lot of people that I've heard on some of your podcasts, don't necessarily, aren't always doing a lot with books.
Yeah.
And I'll admit, I don't read a lot of books, but there are a couple things that I do focus on. The last book that I'll say that I really read, the book was called Lone Survivor.
Okay.
And I don't know if you've heard of Lone Survivor, but it's a story about Marcus Luttrell. They made it into a movie.
Yes. Yeah.
So they made it into a movie well before it ever became a movie. This Marcus Luttrell, he was a Navy SEAL. I think there was 19 people that got killed in pretty much just trying to rescue him. Either between his group and people coming to rescue him. Man, it was like a ton of Navy SEALs got killed out of this deal. But at the end of the day, he gets caught by... they're fighting like the Taliban.
Yep.
And he had a person, he really persevered through a lot of things. He was shot up, broken leg, all these things going on. And I'm trying to think of the name of the group, but in a nutshell, somebody got him.
Yep.
Who they said, we'll protect you because you're down and out. And that's kind of the code they live by. And they kind of helped protect him from the Taliban for a little while until U.S. forces get in and get him.
Okay.
But very cool story.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one of those, it's tough to put that book down.
Yeah.
Because from beginning to end, it starts out with him and his brother being a kid in kids in Texas, going all the way up through Navy SEAL training and every and their whole experience, his whole experience of getting to the point where he was at.
And that's all true. Too,
that's
right?
A completely true
story.
That's
what I thought. Okay.
Absolutely.
Very cool.
I think that right there is just a great book.
Yeah.
If you haven't had a chance to read it, you won't want to put it down.
Yeah, and I think I might even have that movie, but it's been years probably since I watched it.
Because the movie doesn't really do it justice. Yeah. Because really the movie kind of starts at a point
mm-hmm.
where the, if you want to say the latter half of the book, right?
Mm-hmm.
Getting over where they're starting their fighting and what's going on that way. But
yeah.
The book really goes through his whole life.
Okay.
And man, cool. Great book.
Cool. Well, awesome. What do you have other things on favorite book?
The only other thing I really do, I do read a lot of magazines.
Okay.
What
magazines?
Well, the big one I read is Bugle.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm a Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation life member. And because it's just something that I agree in what the Elk Foundation's doing, and I like to go elk hunting.
What do they do that you agree with?
I like
for
that
people that don't know.
They're trying to conserve land, and they're trying to keep land that, if you want to say the natural land that elk really occupy,
mm-hmm.
they're trying to keep it so any way to improve habitat where not only elk live but all the other wild animals,
yeah.
Things like that. So they're really near and dear to my heart that way, that they're really, conservation is big on their list of things that they do.
Yeah.
Because obviously, you know, we've been elk hunting together.
Oh yeah.
And when you get out west, That's one of my favorite places to go is out west.
Yeah.
You get up on the mountainside and you get in camp and you're 6 miles off the closest road possibly or more.
Yep.
And it's nothing but hard work at that point.
Yeah. And that's I appreciate the Elk Foundation for the same thing. And it's not just elk. I mean, they help. The nice part is elk live in a place where lots of other animals live.
That's right. That's right.
If you like foxes, guess what? They help protect foxes too.
Right. Exactly. The deer, the water, birds, whatever, everything around there, which is great.
Yeah, and you know all the money is going to something good.
Right. I really like that. They're trying to preserve land. They're buying land. They're buying easements to public land.
Yep.
Which is the best thing is like when we go hunting, I know a lot of people talk about, boy, that's got to be expensive. I'm like, well, it's a couple tanks of gas and it's getting on the mountainside. I said, I already have the rifle and clothes from deer hunting. So
yeah,
a lot of it, I said, we already have it. And then you just got to buy a tag.
Yeah.
I said, it's amazing what you can do for $1,000 instead of going on a $5,000 to $7,000 to $10,000 guided ranch hunt.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I said, you know, we've got an elk that some people go to a ranch, they don't get elk that nice.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's where I think it's great.
Yeah. And I think, what were you saying the other day? It's about the story.
Right.
I don't go out there with the mindset that we're going to get a big bull every time. I go out there with the mindset that I'm going to come home and tell somebody a cool story.
Right. Every hunt has its own story.
Oh, yeah.
Is the best way to go.
Yep.
And you get some, like the last time we went, 2-3 feet of snow. Yeah. Can't get to where we want to go.
Oh, yeah. Guys, this is the guy that came back with Brian an hour after we got back. Like, I'm talking to the guy that elk walked me that day. So
what I have to give you credit for, it was the very first time I went elk hunting. I remember, I think it was me, you, and Brian sat down with some topo maps.
Yeah.
And you at least had an idea of the lay of the land. Brian and I had never been out to Colorado before.
Yeah.
And you're like, hey, I'd sit here. You showed us a couple spots.
Because I didn't even go with you that time.
Right. You didn't even go with. And I don't know if I'd even met you yet.
Yeah.
Honestly, I think actually you and Brian sat down and talked about it. And then Brian and I were going through the map. And when we got out there, the spot I went to my very first year elk hunting, I got a 5x5 bull.
Sitting right on the edge of that meadow, right up on that hilltop
right
there. Yeah.
The only thing that happened there was after we shot that bull, I think we had 5 miles of walking back with an elk on your back.
Oh, yeah.
So we definitely found out that it's a lot easier to hunt them. And once you shoot them, that's when the real work begins.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah.
We followed some elk out of some places over there.
Right. Absolutely, we have.
Yeah. And, you know, Brian and I went back that next year with horses to where you had shot your bull. And I remember Brian saying, well, we walked out this way before along the fence line. We might as well ride horses that way. I'm like, I guided out here for 2 years. We never rode horse that way. I don't know if we should be going that way. And we went. I've never been on a horse ride like that in my entire life, and I hope I never am. So I don't know how you guys packed elk out on your backs that way. That was some up and down.
There was a lot of up and down, and I believe it was the shortest route.
Yes, but, it was.
But I do remember the first trip back wasn't bad after we shot the elk. It was the next day when we went back and we had 3 frame packs and packed out that elk, and we knew we were going to get everything on those 3 frame packs.
Yeah.
And it was it was pretty interesting.
Yeah.
We were happy to get back to camp. We'll put it that way.
Yep. Yep. That's awesome. What is your favorite food?
My favorite food. Well, you know me, Alec. I like to eat.
Yeah.
But, I really think it's just about anything on a grill. I love to grill. I love, I really like a good burger, a good steak. Definitely. Awesome. I think a good steak is pretty tough to beat, especially on the grill. The one thing that I've gotten, and you've been a part of, Brian and I have invited you this year to help make our own sausage, things like that. So I do enjoy kind of enjoying the fruits of our labors of whether it be elk hunting, deer hunting, those types of things, and making our own brats and hot dogs and breakfast sausage. In fact, we had some breakfast sausage before we even got started today.
Very good.
But, you know, that's another aspect of more work.
Yeah.
A lot of people, if you only shoot one deer and you take it in to a locker and you come back with food, that's one thing. But we literally process the deer or elk from start to finish. We see the whole process through.
Yeah. Yeah, that was really cool.
Yeah.
So, and to the kids, I mean, the fact that the kids are all there and around helping out. We had everything from Willow, who's two, to I think I had my 5-year-old or something, and then we had all the other kids there helping out.
Right. So we've got the kids. So what the nice thing is when you back up a little bit is, A, when you start deer hunting, you're getting the kids out shooting. You're getting them doing things outdoors. You're seeing how the family works because we do a lot of deer drives. And not a lot of people do deer drives anymore, but then there's a safety aspect of that on how to be safe and the communication. Then it comes to shooting the deer. Then it comes to dragging the deer.
Yeah.
You hang them up, you butcher them, and then you get to the final phase of the kids see the whole process.
Yeah.
And I think that's good for them.
Oh, yeah.
And I think it's good for them to be a part of that and show them that, hey, it's fun to go out and shoot a rifle at a target. When you go deer hunting, it's a lot of fun.
Yep.
It's fun to harvest that deer and do those things because you get so many stories and all these other things that happen with it.
Yeah.
And so when you get all that, but you show there's hard work all the way along.
Yeah, hard work and responsibility can be fun. It can all be one and the same.
Right,
that's exactly the cool part. And a lot of people, I think, misunderstand that, the responsibility and hard work. To us, that's fun.
And I think what we have is always, of course, there's a lot of fun banter back and forth, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think this goes back to a lot of the things that my brother and I have ever done is we've done a lot of jobs that I'll say weren't a lot of fun.
Yeah.
But if you make them fun and you kind of sit there and understand we got to get through this and you try to have a little fun with it, it makes your day a little better.
Oh, yeah.
It still might not be fun, but if you can have a good time while you're doing it, you know, whether it be playing the radio on the, you know, if you're roofing, playing the radio and giving guys crap, whatever happens to be you know, just have a good time with it.
Oh yeah. Cool. Well, we always end this. I think we're about that time. We always end it with the one reason you get up in the morning. If you had to pick the best reason to share with people, or what would it be?
Well, I know you don't necessarily like this answer because I believe it's pretty similar to your dad's. It's why not?
Oh, yeah.
Because when I say why not is, you know, like a beautiful morning like today, the sun's out. There's so many things that you can see and go do, and life is great. I mean, there's so many things to experience and see. That's why I say why not?
Yeah.
It's really one of those that if you haven't found something that you truly like to do, you'll find something at one point, you know, that really gets a fire burning in. That's what everybody should be looking for. What really gets you up in the morning? I just like getting up and even if it's just sitting here with a cup of coffee, looking outside, or if it's going for a walk, whatever it happens to be, you know, everybody's got their own reason to get up and do things.
Yeah.
But there's always a reason. And hopefully there's always somebody along the, like we've talked a little bit, there's a lot of different people you meet along the journey of life.
Yeah.
And how is somebody going to help you through? And maybe you haven't met somebody that's going to help you through if you're in a bad spot.
Yeah.
Things like that.
Yeah. You might meet them today.
Right. Today could be the day.
Yeah.
You know,
that's very cool.
So I know you hate that. Why not?
Yeah. Yeah. First podcast ever.
Right.
Why not? But I'll tell you, that question has turned into a lot of wisdom, more wisdom than I ever could have got out of that question if everybody answered it the way I wanted it answered.
Right.
So, yeah, and this morning I show up here at whatever time it was still dark out, and but pretty soon here comes Ben walking outside and cold as crap out, and he's wearing his t-shirt, but there's something to that, feeling the cold air in the morning.
Yeah.
There's something to that that just wakes you up more than just waking up your body.
Absolutely.
Gets you going for the day. So, yeah. Well, I appreciate you doing the interview.
I do appreciate the time.
Yeah.
I'm really glad that I could tell my story.
Yeah.
And, of course, it's always fun hanging out with you, Alec.
Oh, yeah.
And we keep hanging out and talking a little more and more all the time. So
yeah.
I like it.
I do, too. Thanks a lot, Ben.
No problem. Have a good one.